Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and I am so freaking excited to introduce you to our next guest. How's it going, Eric Smith?
Hey, pretty great.
So we're going to talk about your book that isn't even out yet, because we're so awesome. So Eric's new book is The Geek's Guide to Dating, and it's full of delightful 8-bit illustrations. And talk about your book. Talk about your own book.
It's a cute little book that uses video games, comic books, movies, and all sorts of things in pop culture to talk to people about dating and dish out, you know, useful advice using sort of a geeky lens.
So you have a lot of references in this to video games, to comics, to movies, etc. You clearly know what you're talking about, or at least I assume, because I didn't even get like a lot of the references, because that I'm going to out myself as evidently not good enough of a geek. So how do you know so much about so much stuff? Like, how did you find the time to write this if you're also consuming all this pop culture?
I just consume a ton of pop culture. I run a blog called Geekadelphia here in Philly, where I talk about geek culture locally. I also write for Geekosystem and a bunch of other places. So, you know, geek culture has just been a big part of my life for a really long time. And when I was asked to write the book, it was just kind of easy to, you know, pull from the wide array of TV shows and, you know, various collectible card games I played, you know, all my life and stick them into a book.
So the whole idea is that, like, this is a book for someone who is in that culture.
Yes.
So, like, somebody would want to be familiar with a lot of this because it's, like, sort of a translation mm-hmm. of, like, how to take the information that they do know and to put it into this world that they may not be as familiar with.
Yeah, like, there's a whole section in the book that talks about planning a date by discussing materia in Final Fantasy VII. And, you know, a couple people might not necessarily get that when they read the book. So it's clearly written for, you know, the geeky minded.
But I feel like it might be the geek renaissance right now.
Mm, yeah.
So I think this is going to be like this is well times, which might be why didn't Amazon just give you like mad props?
Yeah. Amazon picked it as one of their best books of 2013 in humor. So it's in a category with George Lucas and David Sedaris and a lot of other people that are way smarter than I am. So it's really exciting to see it there.
So where did you go for your dating information? Was that just from your own experience, or where did you figure it all out?
A lot of it's from my own experience. A lot of it was from research. You know, I spent a lot of time, you know, reading up on sites like How About We and all the great articles that OkCupid manages to put together. I read a couple, you know, extra dating books. There was one book called Dating Makes Me Want to Die, which was hilarious and really funny and really light and well-written. I tried to, you know, look at as many articles as I could that were, you know, positive and fun and, you know, not creepy. You know, there's a lot of those. What's the word I'm looking for?
The nice guys trademarked.
Yeah, you know, like they're just all those like predatory sort of dating pieces, and I tried to avoid completely while reading up.
And I think that is something that is very well accomplished in this. For being a book that is aimed to male readers who are trying to date females, it does not have that grossness to it, which is awesome.
Thank you.
Like, because I've read, I've of course read The Game, and of course, you know, all of the pickup artist sort of stuff. And like, it has its utility, but it is definitely steeped in, you know, like certain beliefs about gender and about sexuality that just like the whole time I'm just like trying not to like inadvertently be stabbing something to death. Like, so I really enjoyed. And in fact, you like sort of talk about it within the context of the book. Like, you talk about the manic pixie dream girl. You talk about unrealistic expectations for how women should act or should look and that sort of stuff. What was important to you in terms of overturning those notions that people might get through media consumption?
Hmm. You know, it might come from all the cosplay events I go to. You know, I spend a lot of time at Comic-Con and, you know, various conventions. And, you know, I see just, like, these hordes of guys, like, you know, lusting after, you know, a lot of these poor girls that are just dressed up and trying to have a good time. And they sort of put them on these, like, you know, these pedestals. You see their pictures floating all over the internet. And, you know, it just drives me crazy to see men treat women as objects like that. And to sort of combat the whole manic pixie dream girl thing, it really bugs me when I have, you know, a guy friend or a girlfriend who meets someone that they really like a lot, and they're like, oh, you know, this person's gonna, they're gonna fix me. You know, this is what I need. I need this relationship to make me better. And that's sort of a really poor way to approach a relationship. You know, it's something I've done in the past and have learned not to do. So I wanted to, you know, sort of dish out that kind of advice. But, you know, to be clear, I kind of like the manic pixie dream girl in movies. You know, Almost Famous is one of my favorite movies. And what else is another great one? I loved Ruby Sparks. You know, like, I have no problem with them. It's just in reality, it's probably not
Garden
good.
State.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
The Town, all of those. Yeah. And it serves like a narrative function. Like, essentially, that character is like symbolically representative mm-hmm. of something that the main character needs to learn or do or whatever. Yeah. So like, yeah, it serves a function, but it's like, if you don't have women in your actual life and that's the impression that you're getting that they should be like, then it might be disappointing when it turns out that like the girls that are most appealing to you, it's because they're bipolar. Mm-hmm. Because like, that's what they're also sort of representative of, is like bipolar disorders. And I really like that the point you just made about finding somebody who's going to fix you or complete you, and like that whole notion that like, you know, you should be finding a partner as a goal for your self journey, as opposed to like figure your own shit out and be the kind of person that someone would want to date.
Yeah.
Like just that notion. 'Cause yeah, I mean, I've certainly seen, in my own experience, like as someone who's like, I guess, quasi in geek culture, like hang out with geek boys. And I've seen them do it. Like my dude friends and like the girls they're looking for are not girls that they really necessarily have that much in common with mm-hmm. or girls who they have anything to offer. But like that girl has attributes that they wish they had. And therefore, by dating that girl, those attributes are then applied to you. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like a role-playing game. You know, it's not like Final Fantasy where you're going to get this additional party member to make, you know, a stronger, you know, battle system, so to speak. You know, like adding that person's not going to definitely make you better. You have to level up yourself, I guess.
Oh. Well, I mean, there's also, you know, there's definitely something to be said for like finding someone who, you know, compliments you.
And,
you know, isn't necessarily the exact same person you are. Mm-hmm. Which brings me to my next question. So this is a book for someone who is a geek. Do geeks have to date other geeks?
I don't think so. Okay. You know, especially in my case, like my fiance is definitely a non-geek. She doesn't play video games. She doesn't like comic books. She's never seen Star Wars or any of the Indiana Jones movies. But we still make it work, you know, because there's a lot of fun in discovering new things with somebody else. And that's, I think that's one of the points I try to make a lot in there, is that like, you know, don't not date somebody. Oh, that's a terrible double infinite. Don't skip out on meeting someone because they don't like a certain video game or a certain movie or a certain comic book. Because there's a great sort of bonding opportunity there to, you know, introduce them to what you care about.
So I'm going to ask about your relationship specifically then.
Yeah.
So what is she into? What's her scene?
Well, she does watch a lot of movies. She loves big into HBO shows and big into her music, likes going out dancing a lot. You know, she's taken a lot of time to introduce me to, you know, the kind of books that she likes to read. She's really big into Toni Morrison. So yeah, stuff like that.
That's interesting. All right. So,
She's starting blogging. That's something that I sort of got her into, you know, since that's sort of my life. That's now a part of hers.
And so do you think this balance is like, you know, you're not too far apart, but like,
oh yeah, it definitely strikes a nice balance that I like a lot.
Does it ever make you sad that you don't have like more like geeked him out at the same moments, like that she doesn't get as giddy about the things that really like make you super excited.
No, it's usually funny, you know. Okay. Like I'll freak out because I see someone wearing a trench coat that looks like something out of Firefly, and she just won't understand what it is, and then I have to explain it, and it usually makes me laugh, you know, because then it's also something I can introduce her to later.
So you're like people from different countries who fall in love.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to introduce you to the food of my people.
Yes.
And
it is pizza.
It will be delicious. So what about the other people reading? Would you have a suggestion for them about like whether or not they're going to have more compatibility with other geeks, or like if they should aim for people within their geek like network of friends? Like, what are your suggestions for other people?
I always suggest to, you know, try to meet people that are different. You know, it's, you know, there's that old adage of opposites attract, which I think is true, you know, and there's great opportunity there to, you know, I don't want to say better yourself, because I feel like we just talked about that not being a thing when you meet somebody, but, you know, expanding your horizons because this new person introduces you to so many new things.
Well, I think the opposites attract thing is a really interesting process, because in reality, like, similarity actually attracts. It's just that what people count as opposite is going to be very, very interesting. Because like often when couples are like completely different looking from the outside, the reality is that you just don't know what they have in common. Like,
yeah,
what is it that they bonded over? So I think your point's still definitely like, don't be afraid of differences. But like, I mean, obviously you and your fiance, like, you have other stuff in common.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even
yeah.
if your media isn't the same. Like, you know, probably have like shared values and like.
Yeah, yeah. We both like going out to eat, you know, we like to travel.
The universals. Yeah. The food will win over everybody all the time. So you devote a fair amount of time on here specifically to online dating.
Mm.
So is that something that's just like, because it's 2013?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I feel like it's definitely like the new normal for people, you know, like that's where you go to meet people now. That's how I've met a lot of people I've dated. It's how I met my fiance. So, yeah, there's a big focus on that.
And then, I mean, there's obviously like a lot of different dating sites, like for very specific interests or very specific, you know, demographics or whatever. So given what we've been talking about so far, do you recommend going to a site that's like very specific or just like a broader one, like an OkCupid or a Match or like,
that's a good question. I never tried any of those like niche-y sort of websites. Like I know there's like online dating sites specifically for geeks, you know, there's like Geek to Geek. And then there's, what else is there? There's all those different portals out there that sort of link to very specific people. But you know, unless you're really dead set on going on like millionairematchmaker.com to find your very wealthy husband and or wife, I would pick a broader one. You know, there's, I feel like there's more people that are gonna be there for you to talk to.
Like I'm a big fan of OkCupid. I remember the site before it was what it was, and like just being impressed by their use of statistics
of
how people actually use the sites.
Yeah, oh, their articles are great. I love reading them. One of my favorite ones was was it on How About We? It was on one of those websites. They wrote this article about where people in Philadelphia were going out to eat who use that website, Ashley Madison. And almost everybody goes out to eat at the Ruby Tuesdays in Center City.
What?
Which I thought was hilarious. Like all...
Why that?
All this infidelity is happening at Ruby Tuesdays. I don't know, but apparently that's the place. Oddly enough, me and my fiance love to go there.
That is really interesting. I wonder what that's about, because it's not like necessarily a super fancy place.
Yeah, I know.
So maybe it's like you just won't run into people there because it's more touristy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just reading about former employee of Ashley Madison who's suing for like $20 million.
What?
Her job was for $34,000 a year. This was specifically when they were expanding into South America. And her job was to create fake profiles of women.
Oh, my goodness.
So that guys, because the guys pay to be on there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the company wanted it to appear as though there were more women on the site than there actually were. So her job full time was creating these fake women. And so she's actually suing. Her argument's that it like injured her wrists from all the typing. That's like the way through which she's going. But I think ultimately the point is just to expose that practice and to take the company down. Is ultimately like she's just mad at them for existing and being that sort of thing. I don't know.
That's incredible.
I mean, I have so many feelings about Ashley Madison because it's like I'm fine with Polly, I'm fine with open relationships, I'm fine with that, but that's not what it is.
Yeah, no,
it's all
not
about
at all.
Duplicity, and then I'm like, that's just, I don't, seems really bad karma.
Yeah.
Just seems like bad deal. Yeah. But OkCupid, on the other hand.
OkCupid is good.
Yeah.
Yes.
although,
that's where I met Nina.
Yeah, but I get the impression that some people who go on there very serious, like looking for love, looking for a relationship, and because you don't have to pay to be on it, the people might just be fucking around a lot.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I met some not so great people on there while I was on there, but yeah, for every not so great person, there's someone amazing, you know, on there waiting.
Well, because you don't need to connect with 60 people. Like, if you're looking for one, you really only need to find one that's not messing around. But like, how quickly do you recommend taking it from like a dating site, or let's say you find each other on Facebook? Because you talk a little bit about like what would be protocol for that as well. How do you recommend taking it from that world to in real life meeting? Like,
oh,
and how quickly?
Well, it was funny. Like, my fiance and I had a special case because she was away in Michigan when we first started talking on OkCupid. So it was like 6 weeks of like emails and like text messages, and then eventually very nervous phone calls where we ended up hanging up and not really talking to one another. But I would say, you know, after a couple messages back and forth, you know, go for sending your phone number or go for sending an email, and the conversation keeps up and is just fine. You know, I don't see any reason to really wait all that long.
Cause I mean, you did talk about like the friend zone, which is like sort of a contentious thing that people talk about, but like legitimately one of the reasons people end up there in, you know, this place is that they take too long to like put themselves out there.
Mm. Well, yeah. And also there's, you know, cases like me, like I don't really want to date anywhere near my circle at all, you know? So it's a good reason to hop on an online dating site and get completely out of it.
To just like completely expand from your network.
Yeah. Sort of avoids the inevitable drama that can end up happening.
That's really interesting. Cause I've also heard some people were like the best bet for them was to have like a friend connection so that you could have someone at least kind of vouch that they weren't a crazy person or like, you know, that you'll have something in common, I guess. And if you go out, like, and this brings up catfishing, as per, you know, catfishing. So, I don't know, like, where that was going. I just want to hear your thoughts on catfishing now, actually.
Well, my fiance, she's obsessed with that television show. Like, oh my God, she cannot get enough of that. We actually watched it with her, like, 70-year-old grandmother back in Michigan, who also was thrilled by the program. It's terrible, you know, it's kind of... Like, I watch the program, and I sometimes laugh, but for the most part, it's, you know, my heart hurts when I see these people that are just, like, so eager to finally have a connection with someone, only to discover that it's something they don't want at all. It's something to look out for, you know? Like, you see people doing catfishing. It sounds ridiculous, but, you know, in, like, an MMORPG, like World of Warcraft, or, like, those online games, people will do catfishing to, you know, build a fake relationship in order to get items and things like that. Yeah, it's something to be wary of.
So that's interesting. Like, so if they're doing it in that sort of context where they're doing it for a specific reason, like to make someone give them something, is that not then just essentially like online emotional prostitution?
Yeah, it kind of feels like that, doesn't it?
And it's like, so then I have to wonder, like, if you're doing that, is it because you're actively trying to play someone, or if you're just like starting these relationships and then you're like just sort of a person who likes getting things from people?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't really know. Have you ever been catfished? Do you know anybody who has?
Me? No. No, I don't think I know anyone that's been catfished.
I feel like
if any of my friends were, they wouldn't tell me.
Yeah,
you know, like they probably wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely people I'm curious, you know, like how honest they are. If you're just like in some forum where you're going to spend a lot of time, but you don't actually have like a tie to your real life. Like, so it seems like it's, It doesn't even have to necessarily be like an intentional thing. Just like you go in there and I'm just going to go be this other person because that's the whole point of it anyway. Mm-hmm. And then you like spark a conversation that's interesting and then like, what am I going to do now?
Yeah, yeah.
And like backpedal and pretend that I'm not like a 37-year-old, you know, like whatever. I don't know. I don't know how that works out. But you know, you talk about when you're building your online profile to not hide who you are, right?
Yeah, because
It's going to come out.
Yeah, eventually. It's funny, my fiance was talking to me the other day about how she was telling her friends about me, you know, because we'd been talking and texting for so long. She's like, yeah, I met this guy, this, this, and this. He has a pet rabbit. And all her friends are like, what? Really? Do you really want to keep talking to this guy? Because in like my online profile, I talk, you know, quite openly about, oh, yeah, I have a pet bunny. Name's Rory after Rorschach and The Watchmen. And like I just laid it all out there, all this nerdy stuff that, you know, is me. And, you know, she kept seeing me despite the fact that her friends were kind of like, that seems a little weird. But
bunny is a deal breaker?
Apparently. I don't know. I don't think it is. But I don't know. I'm a big believer in just putting it all out there. Like my profile talked about playing video games. It talked about my concern for the upcoming zombie apocalypse and how I look at buildings while I'm walking down the street and wondering where I'll hide. I talked about, you know, how I wanted to be like Senior Chang in Community. Like, it was a very silly profile. And a couple of my friends, you know, questioned it. They're like, you really want to tell people you play a lot of video games and that, you know, you have this bunny, you have this pet chinchilla? I don't know. It seems kind of weird. But why do I want to meet someone that thinks that's odd and doesn't want to hang out with me because of it?
Yeah, I mean, there is that sort of tenuous line because you also include, like, translations that might make it a little bit more accessible for other mm-hmm. people. Like, the finding that balance between like being bluntly honest and being like, so these are my general interests, and just like, yeah, like, how do you navigate that?
Well, it's not like my profile was like, I have a pet bunny and I love it and I cuddle with it while I watch movies and cry watching Pixar, you know, like I don't, there was nothing like that. It was just, you know, it was very simple, like, I don't know, not over the top, you know. Okay.
Because I would actually recommend putting out, like, the bunny, I think, is fantastic. It's, first of all, it's memorable.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And you're looking at a sea of profiles. It's like, it's online shopping, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
online
yeah.
dating is. And that's going to stick out. And it's going to stick out as a, like, an interesting thing that is harmless. Because it's not like, I'm really in... to, I don't know.
I have guns, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, somebody can be into guns and not a sociopath, but
yeah, yeah.
It's also possible for that not to be the case. Yeah, it sticks out as being good. And, like, somebody showing compassion towards, like, a cute little furry thing, I don't see how that would be a bad idea. Like, okay, so maybe, like, 10 bunnies?
Yeah.
That might be a little bit
Yeah, that might be a little bit much.
Really into bunnies. I don't know if I'm that into bunnies that I'm gonna be able to deal, because then for the rest of my life I'm gonna be like, so let's say we move in together and then I'm gonna always have to worry, is that a raisin or is that bunny poop?
Yeah.
Like, then I'm gonna have to be a little bit concerned. But one bunny, it feels like manageable. You can keep the bunny poops in a bunny poop place,
yeah, in the corner. Absolutely.
Bunny poops are gonna stay where they're supposed to stay. Yeah, so the online thing obviously is going to have to translate into real life stuff. You also talk about places where you could just straight up meet in real life. Like, do you think that's particularly challenging for geek people?
I don't think so. You know, I really feel that geeks, no matter what the media says, we're very social creatures by nature. You know, you kind of have to be. You know, if you're a big fan of playing D&D, well, you have to have some friends that want to get in a room with you to tell these long, elaborate stories. You know, if you're a video game person, chances are you play, you know, online. Chances are you have a friend that you play with. So, no, I don't think it's as difficult to meet people in person as, I don't know, some people might think.
Where did that idea come from?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just projecting, like, myself and, like, most of my friends, but mm-hmm. that's all my geeky friends are. Like, all of them are, they're very out there. They're very involved in the things that they really care about. So it's, I don't know, it's very odd for me to see like someone that's, you know, holed away.
Like, when I think about that, is a really pervasive stereotype about geeks, is that they're like antisocial or that sort of thing. But maybe it's just like a residual thing from like high school where, you know, you're forced to spend all day with people you literally have nothing in common with except mm-hmm. for your age and geography.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so in that context, someone might look antisocial mm-hmm. because they don't want to hang out with people who talk about dumb high school shit.
Yeah, yeah.
So no, exactly. So you grow up and then you have this like expectation that you don't talk to people. But like, yeah, I find geekdom to be friendly.
Yeah, absolutely. We have giant conventions. Yeah. Penny Arcade Expo sold out and it's, oh God, it's like 5 months away. You know, like we love each other. You know, there's a big community.
Yeah. So did you recommend like any particular place for meeting people in real life?
In real life? Yeah, I talked a lot about like meeting people like through friends, you know, at, you know, like parties or, you know, going out to the pub. I talked a little bit about, you know, comic book stores, you know, that's, you go on New Book Day, or you go on like Free Comic Book Day, you know, when they're, everybody just sort of attacks the comic book store and then goes see whatever, you know, comic book movie happens to be released that day. Cause if you look, almost every Free Comic Book Day has a major movie release sort of tied to it. Like this year or last year, I think it was Thor, and this year it was the Avengers. Both came out on Free Comic Book Day. Mm. What else is there? Comic books and, you know, conventions. You never know. You can meet someone there. I've never done the convention speed dating circuit, but I know it's a thing and people meet at Comic-Con, you know, all the time.
That there are like legit like planned speed dating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's speed dating at New York. I almost hosted it this year, but sort of fell through. But yeah, it's a thing.
So then that would be interesting because you'd meet like in costume possibly as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what if you're really sad because like, oh, I was really into
you. I really thought you looked like Link from Legend of Zelda.
Yeah. And now I realize that you don't. And so now we have nothing in common. Bye.
Well, hopefully you connect over something more substantial while you're on your speed date.
What do you recommend during speed dating? It's really intimidating to a lot of people.
It is. You know, I've never had to do it, but man, I guess it's funny because I want to say try not to talk about yourself too much. But you only have, what, like 5-10 minutes? So you kind of have to talk about yourself. But, you know, I would ask as many questions as you can. Show that you're interested in that person. And hopefully you get some questions shot back, you know, that shows that they're interested in you. But, yeah.
I ran it was actually a lesbian speed dating event one time for a stimulus party. And I have always found that whole, like, one-on-one thing always ends up turning into questions about what you do for your job, you know, and where you're from, and then like that really basic shit. And then you're going to ask the same questions to everybody because like it's just easier. So instead, like what I did and what I recommend, because I think that the format was pretty successful. So if you run this, feel free to steal this. to do rather than one-on-ones, to do like 4 people talking to each other and then give everybody at the same time a question. Like, so let's say it's a rainy day and you have 7 free hours. What are you going to do? Like something open-ended like that. And so maybe if you're in a speed dating situation where you have to do the one-on-one, just having like 5 or 6 of those questions just like ready to go. And then something open-ended, something that gives you an idea of what their values are. And you can also get a little bit of background because like, yeah, my best friend and I, when we were growing up in Detroit or whatever, and then you're going to get the answers to those questions anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
No, that's a great idea.
So I don't know if speed dating, is it on the way out? I feel like,
I don't know. You know, I was at Nerd Night this past Friday and they did speed dating before the Nerd Night event. And it was sold out. People paid like $25 a person.
Snap.
And like there were people that were clearly hitting it off. Like I saw a couple people like their arms like around each other like at the end of the night. Like I think it still works.
All right. So never mind. The tales of its demise are much exaggerated. All right. So the bad date locations I felt is very good inclusion. So you're going to go on your date in real life and you recommended staying away from some of the things that people have long held to, like
movies and concerts. Yeah, no, like especially on a first date. Like I get it later on down the line. Like, you know, my fiance and I go to the movies all the time, but like early on, going to see a movie on a date, that's especially with movies now that end up being like 3 hours long. That's like, you know, 2.5-3 hours sitting there not talking to each other, watching a movie. Especially if you see it like when there's a lot of other people there, there's no chance to talk to each other. Then you come out and you maybe talk a little bit about the movie. Like, I don't know. I go see movies with friends nowadays, and like you talk for like 15 minutes about the 3-hour movie you just saw, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, so it just feels like it's a wasted opportunity. You should go someplace where you can talk to each other, you know, really get to know the person. Concerts are especially bad because it's so loud, you know, like there's no chance you're going to get to talk to one another. And also the drinks are expensive.
Yeah. And you're also like in that sort of situation in a concert venue, you're kind of like putting obstacles in front of yourself in terms of like, there's going to be a lot of hot people doing crazy things. And including the people on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're kind of asking your date to stare at a rock star.
Yeah, is that what
And then
you
look
want?
Over at you. Yeah. And then it's like, maybe I can get backstage instead.
Yeah.
I came all this way. So what are some good date locations?
Good date locations? You know, sort of maybe like a, I like going to sleepy gastropubs, you know, that you know aren't going to be super packed. Outdoor dates. I like going for walks. You know, my fiance and I go on picnics all the time. It's a really great opportunity to just, you know, sit there and be with the person. It sounds silly, but flea markets.
Yeah.
I love the flea market date. You get to find out way more about the person than you probably would just by talking. You know, you see the weird things that they pick up, you know, odd things that they're into. Record stores, I think, are great first date, early date locations because you get to learn about their kind of music that they like. And bookstores. You know, I love a used bookstore date. You see what they pick up. You know, they start picking up too much Stephanie Meyer, then you just know there's no second date. That's it.
They pick up some Stephanie Meyer and you just like,
you're
back
like, well,
up.
Okay.
Or if they picked up like 50 Shades of Grey, and then I would just leave and I wouldn't say goodbye.
Yeah.
Unless it was to be a joke. Unless it was to be like, I'm going to open to a random page and say this in the funniest accent I can think of. And then you have to do it too. Then I'd be like, oh, it's love.
This is fun.
And you also pointed out the very, very important element of like physiological arousal on a first date and like the tie in there and how like that is like the one good thing about horror movies, but like you can get the same effect from doing a lot of other things that you like. If you get physiological arousal during your first date, like from fear, from like anxiety, from doing something that's like a little bit dangerous, that you're going to associate with that with the person with whom you shared the time.
Yeah.
So maybe like a Ferris wheel is just like very simple, you know, get a little bit of blood pumping, a little bit of heart racing, but like nothing crazy.
Yeah.
Like if you don't feel like going on a rock wall climbing date.
Yeah, you don't have to go bungee jumping, you know.
But you could.
You could.
You could. That'd be pretty sweet. You'd probably have a pretty significant like feeling towards that person at the end. Just like excited you didn't die. And then you're gonna have some excited you didn't die sex. So That would be good. You include some fashion advice in here. Where'd you get your fashion advice?
Oh man, so it's pretty much 100% one of my best friends, Tim, who runs that Geekadelphia site with me. He's probably the best dressed person I know. So lots of time hanging out with him. Lots of time flipping through GQ's Elements of Style book that I absolutely adore. And then there's, you know, endless fantastic Tumblr and Pinterest locations to, you know, figure out what really looks good on a guy.
Is this like sort of a thing that most people need a tutorial on and you just throw it in? Like, how important do you think it is?
I think it's really important. I mean, I needed a tutorial on it just last year, you know, like I was, and sometimes I still do, but I was really just still rocking the jeans and t-shirt every single day all the time. And now I sort of expanded into dressier shirts and vests and things like that. And, you know, now I'm engaged.
Point A, point B. You two put it together. that's interesting. And then, like, is it just sort of like what comes to mind when I was reading that is Arden Lee's book about she has a guide for women picking up men.
Mm-hmm.
And she devotes a pretty significant amount of time to, like, making your look and your environment be fancy and exciting and, like, not hanging out in sweatpants and, you know, like just all of that sort of stuff. And part of her whole thing was that it changing how you even conceive of yourself and that dressing up and that putting all that effort into your environment and into your appearance is, it's not necessarily about making a facade, but about, you know, amplifying yourself
Yeah, yeah. It also reflects on, you know, what you think about yourself. You know, if you take really great care of yourself and you put a lot of effort into how you're dressed, you know, chances are you care about the way you look. You care about who you are. Actually, Tim gave me a great, how did he phrase it? It was something along the lines of, like, your clothes, you know, your hat, your glasses, all that stuff should really just, like, play as an excellent frame for your face. You know, like, all this stuff is decorating everything that's here. You know, it's all going to reflect on, you know, what's coming out of your mouth, what you're saying, what you're doing.
That's a really interesting point. Where did Tim get all his information?
I don't know. I think he was just born that way. Uh-huh. You know, he was birthed and then he had like a flat cap put on his head right away.
And is he pulling lots of tails?
He's also engaged. Yeah, yeah.
So it seems to have been somewhat effective to some degree.
He also won in the Tweed Ride last year, which is a thing here in Philly where people get dressed up very fancy and ride fancy bicycles around town. He won Dapperest Chap. So he's Dapperest the most chap. Well-dressed person. Yeah.
That is, wow.
Yeah, he's a great person to go to for fashion.
Does he have that framed? Like, is it an award? What
did he got like a gift card to a local boutique of some kind. So ooh. I'm sure he picked up additional fancy vests and, you know, cummerbunds or whatever it is that he likes.
Wow. And then I feel like if you're working at that boutique, like that's a lot of pressure. Like, yeah, the, yeah. Dapperest chap.
The Dapperest Chap.
He's coming, you guys. Get out our coolest shit. Like, what if he comes in and he doesn't like us? Maybe this is how we find out we're terrible at this. Yeah, Dapper Chap. Yeah. And you said something specifically, like not wearing like nerd culture t-shirts.
Yeah, you know, I don't recommend it. You know, like as funny as they are and as much as you love them, just, you know, sometimes the 8-bit t-shirts or the shirts like on the Big Bang Theory with the speaker inside that plays your soundtrack as you walk, they might not be appropriate on a first date. Especially if you end up at a nice restaurant.
I didn't even know that existed.
Oh, it does.
Like, how do you make it play?
It's kind of awesome. It like connects to like, there's like a little recording device and you put like a song on it or
so
whatever.
So it's the song that plays when you enter the room?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, or sound effect, you know, like bum, bum, bum when you walk in.
See, now I want that. This is the opposite of what it was supposed to be.
Actually, on my first date with my now fiance, I had like a black dress shirt on, but the t-shirt I had underneath it had like 8-bit cupcakes on it with like nom, nom, nom and little pixels taken out. And I remember like I made a joke about it and she's like, yeah, I'm glad you didn't take off the dress shirt because it was kind of an embarrassing t-shirt that I probably shouldn't have had on.
Aww. I want to wear my Los Pollos Hermanos shirt everywhere. And then you see somebody that has that and you're like, hey, and then we're great. Friends now. We share taste in the thing. Now we're friends. One of the things I definitely wanted to ask you about is you're talking about, let's say you go to dinner, right? And then who's going to pay for it? And I was really interested in like the flow chart that it wasn't actually a flow chart, but like the flow of options. You gave people sort of a multiple choice test. Mm-hmm. What is your philosophy on this?
I'm super old fashioned. I think the guy should pay like all the time.
Okay.
That's just me. Like I'm engaged now and I'm still really irked when my fiance wants to pay. I actually have this thing where when I know the check is coming, I'll get up and use the bathroom. That way I don't have to see her paying for it because I can't. I need to be the gentleman and pay for everything. But yeah, I don't know. It's just like an old-fashioned thing that I don't know why I like it so much. I just think that's how it should be.
Okay.
That's how my parents raised me.
Okay. So, I mean, like, what does it feel like when that's not – so if you were to stay, if you hadn't gone to the bathroom and you were to watch your fiance pay the check.
Oh, it just hurts.
What are the feels? Tell me what are the feelings.
I just get all anxious. Just like, no, I need to be the gentleman. Give me that.
So it makes you feel like you aren't doing your job?
A little bit. Like I need to take care of her.
But she perceives it differently?
Oh yeah. She's, you know, I'm an independent woman. Okay. I can do this. Which is fine. She is. But I like to do it.
And is that just like dinner specifically? Or is it like if you go to a museum you have to pay
we'll
too?
We'll go to lunch, we'll go, you know, wherever. I always try to pay when I can.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, sometimes it comes down to the end of the month, and I'm like, "Well, I've paid too much. Now I don't have any money. You should, you could cover the, Wendy's today."
What if somebody's, you know, going out into the dating world, but they aren't making a lot of money. They might have just moved into a new place, and they spent all their money on the deposit or whatever. Like, you still think that's the way it should go? Like,
I do, but you know, if you can't, you can't. You know, you can go. What is the term? You know, go Dutch. on things. It's fine. You know, it's not the end of the world. Some people, you know, like my fiance, she doesn't care if she pitches in for something. It's just a personal thing for me.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Well, I'm glad we cleared that up. I was very curious. I was like, I don't know. I don't understand. And then, of course, you know, if you're going on dates, it's not always going to work out, which is not bad because you know, it's a filtering process.
Yeah.
You're going to have people you have to reject, and you're going to face rejection from people. What are your recommendations for moving on past a bad date?
Oh, just the bad date? Well, you know, if it's just a bad date, it's just a bad date. You know, there's always gonna be more people to meet. You know, there's always the opportunity to throw yourself back out there, especially if you're online dating. You know, there's going to be more people to talk to, more people to message. If it's something you're really particularly excited about, I don't know. I'm a big fan of eating my feelings. You know, it's something I like to do a lot, but maybe you shouldn't. I don't know. What else?
So, like, if you felt like the date went fine, but the other person did not, or let's say that, like, you feel like, you know, you didn't even really get a chance because of circumstances outside of your control. Cause like you go to a restaurant and, you know, other things ended up being bad. Mm-hmm. Like the service was bad and the food was bad. And then there was a fire. And then, you know, like you got a phone call that grandma's dying or something.
Yeah.
How do you come back from that?
Well, you know, you can always just give a call, you know, send an email if you have to try to, you know, schedule something else. But if it doesn't work, you know, don't push it. You know, no one likes to be pressured into something like that.
So how do people get better at that whole, like, facing the rejection and moving forward?
It's hard. You know, I feel like it varies person to person. You know, some people take rejection really hard and have a hard time getting back out there. Other people just sort of shrug it off. I guess the best way to sort of deal with it is to have a supportive network of people that already care about you. You know, like, I have lots of great friends. You know, when something goes wrong or when something did go wrong, it was always really easy to go to them and, you know, get my self-esteem sort of back up where it should be.
Is there going to be like a geek's guide to sex? Is that going to come out?
I don't know. You know, hey, if my publisher ever wants to do more stuff, all my friends and like people that have read the book are already joking. Like, oh, there should be a geek's guide to marriage now that you're engaged. You know, hey, I do some expansions. That could be fun.
Expansion pack?
Yeah. Booster pack.
I mean, there. I did just open to the boss level of getting married and having kids and settling down and sharing finances and stuff like that. Like, is there any particular advice you would give, just like generally about that sort of stuff, like from the geek perspective?
Man, you know, it feels a lot like playing like a multiplayer game of like Animal Crossing. You know, where you're like sharing the game because you have to make space for one another's stuff while at the same time not, you know, throwing out everything the person cares about. Like, my fiance just moved in, so it's been that experience of, well, what furniture do we keep? You know, do we really need three printers stacked up on top of each other at the moment, which is what we have? So I would just recommend, like, lots of conversation and then lots of fun taking pictures of things and putting it on Craigslist.
Nice. And then, you know, of course, I'm going to just inquire, do you think geeks are better at sex?
I'd like to think so.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know, what's the word I'm looking for? Now I'm flustered.
Oh, you made me blushing.
But, you know, as geeks try to be the best at everything we do. Yeah. So, yeah.
Just go all the way. I mean, that's true. I mean, like, geekdom is about, like, being really, really into something and finding out a lot about it.
Yeah.
And, like, trying to master stuff. Plus, I'm guessing, like, geeks in general are less afraid of finding awesome new technology to integrate.
I suppose so.
So there might be that. That might work out. I don't know. I'm guessing Geek Sex guidebook would also work out well. So I'm going to put that out there as a recommendation. Yeah. So what was your favorite part of doing this whole thing?
Oh, man. Probably, it doesn't really even have to do with writing it, but like the working with Juan, the illustrator who did all the illustrations in the book, and getting to know him better. I was such a huge fan of his work. He does lots of stuff for Wired and other places that it was just so thrilling to see the cute little pixelated pictures start to come in. Also probably, you know, working with I have a little writer circle that I work with, and showing them like the really heavily geeky stuff I was writing for it, and having them, you know, help me sort of trim it down, because as much as I wanted to just slam this book full of nerdy references, it still has to be, you know, accessible and easy to read. So, yeah.
Like, you would have had more obscure stuff?
Or... I probably would have. Okay. Yeah. So it's probably maybe it sounds ridiculous, but the editorial process was really one of my favorite parts of the whole thing.
So, like, what would count in a book of geek-related stuff? What would count as too obscure?
Too obscure? Man, what did I have in there? I think I had way more stuff about Magic the Gathering in there. Okay. Like, there's a section about it that talks about, how did I even do it? I think it's about the dating profile, and talks about magic cards and how combining them makes certain things, you know, a little bit better. But I had way more about that in there, and not everyone plays Magic the Gathering, you know, not everyone plays with Pokemon cards. I had lots of stuff about Pokemon, in there. So it was just, you know, I was cutting back a little bit of that stuff.
To make it just like more generally accessible. Yeah, yeah. But like, I mean, I think that the point of the analogy is certainly valuable.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It's still there.
So, yeah. And I like the whole flow. This is me holding it up to the microphone that you can't see it, and I'm just shaking it violently because I'm so excited. Because it's just, I mean, it's incredibly easy to read. Like, you could open it up at any page and, like, learn some valuable chunklet without having to, like, have started at the beginning necessarily, you know? And, like, you pick it up where you need it. Like, let's say you already have a person in mind and you are going to go on a date. Like, you don't need to necessarily go back to the very beginning. You can get helpful stuff wherever you are. I like it.
Oh, you know what I also really liked a lot? The mixtape. There's a section in the book that talks about, like, songs to get you psyched up for a date. And that was kind of like my personal playlist that I never really get to tell anyone about. Nice. So it was kind of fun to admit to everybody that I like to listen to the Legend of Zelda theme before I go out on a big adventure.
I think Eye of the Tiger was in there.
Yeah. Yeah,
I can get down with some of that. And then, of course, you're going to need, when you do the Inevitable Geek's Guide to Sex, like, you're going to need your sex playlist in there.
Oh, of course.
So start thinking about that now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any recommendations for that now?
Oh, man. I don't know. I have to think about the geek canon of sexy video game music.
I don't know. Because I once did a burlesque act that was Doctor Who themed, and it was a really long deliberation process of which theme to use. And then, like, I decided on, I can't remember which one was, like, maybe the 8th or something. I felt like that was the most... It was the David Tennant era? Okay. So this is... I'm going to out myself as not really knowing that much about Doctor Who, it was for someone who did know a lot about Doctor Who. So I made a TARDIS dress.
That's excellent.
So the point was, it's burlesque, and so you take it off. So it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
So I could have come out in a sack. Because that's not the point. Yeah. All right. So how can people get this book?
Well, it's on, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound. It's available. It's going to be available in all bookstores December 3rd. It's also available on audiobook, which is kind of crazy. I haven't heard it yet, but that'll be out December 3rd as well.
Who read it?
Rob, I can't remember his last name, but he's done a lot of YA books. He did a couple John Green books. Uh-huh. He's done some Danielle Steele books. So I'm really excited to hear his take on the book. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then...
I pre-ordered the audiobook because I need to have it when it comes out.
And so that's kind of pretty good timing for, like, Christmas and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, just putting it out there.
That's kind of nice.
Where can people find out more stuff about you?
I have a personal blog called ericsmithrocks.com. Also on Twitter is ericsmithrocks. I guess those are the best spots to sort of hunt me down. I also write for Geekosystem, a website called Book Riot, and I run geekadelphia.com. So I'm all over the place.
So what's on Geekadelphia? Where can people go?
What's on Geek? Well, Geekadelphia is for Philly people, really, or at least Philly-based general area people. We cover local geek happenings, like, you know, indie video game developers and local comic book artists, and, you know, interesting things happening at the local museums that sort of skew to the geek side of things. And then we host a giant award show every year.
Woohoo!
Yay!
Awards for everyone! High fives for some. Awesome. Very cool. So thank you so much. And we actually have a copy to give away.
Yes.
So we're going to be coming up with some sort of devious plot to figure out who's going to win it. So we want to thank you, and Eric's going to sign it because that's going to make it so much better. So everybody stay tuned for that. We're going to post information on Twitter and on Facebook about how you can win your own copy.
Yay!
Geek's Guide to Dating, which is going to be out in December. So thank you super much, Eric.
This has been
really rad. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And have a good day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Sex with Timory, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimory.com, Sex with Timory on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timory_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.